God, we thank you for this night. And we thank you that we could be a part of this great community. We thank you that you are working in our lives, that you are working in the world. We thank you for this calling that you offer to all of us. We thank you for the gifts that you give to us. And we ask you, God, to help us all to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. Help us to move mountains. Help us to transform the world. Do something special with us tonight. And all God's people said. October 15th, 2005, changed my life forever. After 9 months of pregnancy and 15 hours of labor, Stacy gave birth to our son. And I remember the very minute afterwards when I'm holding my boy in my arms and I was like, whoa, this changes everything. And I remember thinking to myself, okay, for most of my life I've been a son and I've been a student and I'm a husband and now I have this new identity. I'm holding in my arms this new identity. And this new identity has this heaviness to it. This new identity comes with a calling. Stacy and I now had this Herculean task to raise, to grow, to nurture, to dream with, to play with, to help this little baby become the man he could be. We were going to need a lot of help. And so every day in every way, we're given these new identities and these callings. In fact, new identities and callings are everywhere. It's when you finally pass every test and fulfill the hour requirement, they hand you your driver's license and your mom and dad give you the car keys. A new identity and a calling. It's when after all the paperwork is done and you're finally accepted into the college that you'd hoped for. Identity and calling. It's when you go to the mall and are suckered into buying the cute puppy in the store. A new identity and a calling. And it's in those other beautiful moments when you receive that degree and are like, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Or when you get a new job, make a new move to a new city, new identities and callings. But these also happen in times of loss. Times when we lose our job. Times when we lose a relationship that we thought was so meaningful. New identities and callings are everywhere. And in this great book of Ephesians, if the book of Ephesians was a giant ship, chapter 5 would be the rudder. And chapter 5 gives us this new identity and this calling. And for the last 7 weeks, we've been really trying to chase down what this new identity and calling is and how we can actually swim in our lives and not sink with these new identities and callings. And in chapter 5, it makes these incredible claim that we are all children of God. And that's like really awesome and really exciting until you read the next clause. It says, now imitate God. And then it says, by living in love. And so there's this identity that we're given. And then there's this calling. A child of God. Live in love. Imitate God. Love others. Love yourself. Love those people who have that gray cloud over their head and are grumpy and hard to love. And love God. So it's this letting love sort of saturate everything that you are to other people. Letting it sort of ooze from you to everyone. A new identity and a calling. And there's a sense that Ephesians gives us that we can swim. We can not only swim and not sink, but we can sail on the raging waters of this world and not stay at home in the safe security of the harbor. We can swim. We can go places that we never thought possible. In chapter 4, in this passage that was just read, it gives us even more insight, encouragement into this life of love, into this identity and calling that we've received. And it says, lead a life worthy of the calling to which you have been called. And that word calling is kaleo in the Greek, and it's used four times in this passage. And it's fascinating in this whole passage because I think that it offers to us this paradox. Christians, to understand Christian calling is a paradox. And I was thinking about it like this week. A calling is a divine invitation to look deeply at what you've always known and to see the known in new ways. So there's this real paradox. We're called to sort of look at these areas where we've been called, the relationships and the careers and the communities, and to look back on them and to look deeply at them, but we find in them our deepest calling. So we have to look deeply at them and sometimes say no to some of those relationships and some of those careers and some of those communities, but they are the very place where we also see the face of God. So we have this paradox in our calling, this invitation to look at our relationships and to look at our careers, and then this invitation to give more towards each one of those places. For me, that's becoming a dad and learning that it's in becoming a dad that I see the very face of God. The verse uses another fascinating word. It says this calling that they're talking about, we're called to lead a life worthy of the calling. And it's sort of a strange word for us in America, worthy. You know, you sort of like, what does this mean? Well, to an ancient mind, this was a word picture. It's actually a beautiful word picture. When you went to the ancient marketplace, you had scales there. So if you wanted to buy some wheat or some grains or some special spices, they would put on one side of the scale what you were buying, and then on the other side, lead weights that equaled the amount of coin or currency that you were going to pay. And when it balanced, they called it worthy or fit. So it's this beautiful image. The Ephesians are asking us to say, put yourself on the scale. All the love that's been poured into your life, all the resources you have, are you living a worthy life? Are you living out your calling in love? Does the life you are living match up with your calling, your new identity? That's one of those passages where once you see the image, you're like, ouch. That's like a gut question that we ask ourselves. So am I being the dad that I'm called to be on that scale? When Trey was 3 years old, my worthiness of a dad would be put to the test. Stacy got asked to go on a weekend trip with some girlfriends, and so I was on full-time daddy duty. And I did what every dad does on daddy duty. I made a plan. And we decided that in my household, mental note, in my household, first of all, McDonald's is not being a worthy dad. So I had to make a plan of, I made eggs and toast and a blueberry smoothie for breakfast. Then we were going across town to a little kid birthday party, very safe. And then back home for popcorn and root beer floats and movie night. So this day was planned. It was going to go great. I woke Trey up to some awesome music. We got music going. I'm flipping eggs. I put Trey up on the counter. The toast is getting ready. I'm putting cheese back on the eggs. And this blueberry smoothie thing is going on. And everything's kind of getting done at once. And I'm like, oh, this is getting hard. So I'm back forth. And then mistake number one, I took the top off the blender. And then I'm getting the eggs. And my little three-year-old son just reached over. Boom. All over our white countertops. It's a blueberry blizzard. Everywhere, right? And I wish that I could tell you right now that I responded with the absolute peace and calmness of Jesus. But I was furious. It was super inconvenient, right? There's like blueberry everywhere. You know, like, we will be finding blueberry for years to come, all over the countertops and all over our clothes. And so I rush and I panic and I get us all changed. And so we're running late already this morning. And we're going to come back to this story. But the story is this sense. There's this sense that, as I told you in the beginning, I'm going to need a lot of help with this dad thing. And the passage moves on and it tells us, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, accepting one another in love, making every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. So it moves from this scales. How are you measuring up? How are you living in love? To all of a sudden, these relational terms, right? humility and gentleness. Every term demands how we relate to other people. It's community. And so, the first chord of our life from this passage is calling, that great Ephesian calling to live in love. And the second chord, is community. And so it's fascinating to me that it's through community that our callings actually are able to flourish. Just like a ship's crew. They couldn't sail the mighty seas without a community of people. The passage then explodes into poetry. It says, one body and one spirit, just as you were called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, who is above all, working through all and in all. And this poetry once again reminds us of the power of community to energize and synergize and revitalize our lives to help us when the blueberry blizzards smack us in the face. Another thing about community that's hard is community not only energizes and synergizes, but a community holds us accountable. It always forces us to become our best self. So I get Trey in the car, and I'm like, okay, fine, disaster over. And I jump on the freeway, and I'm living in LA, so I have to go all the way across town. And of course, there's going to be traffic. And so I'm frustrated the whole way there. We pull up to the house and we're like a half hour late. We're like almost the awkward stage for like the kid's birthday party. And so I unlock the door and he looks up at me and he said, Dad, I had an accident. Mistake number two of the day, I forgot the diaper bag at home. And so I'm like, oh man. And in this moment, I'm like, okay, there are two real options to this dilemma. One, go home, call it a day. Break out the root beer floats a little bit earlier. Or two, just own it. Go in the party and hope that there's a super mom present. And so I basically walk into the party and I'm walking like this, right? And like grandma, I mean, I suppose, I always thought that she kind of had her antenna up, but I suppose when you're walking like this, that grandma knew what was going on. And I walk right in and grandma says, let me help you. And grabs Trey. Supermom was there and had three spare diaper bags in her car. Who are these people? Amazing. And so Trey had a brand new outfit on. And then a young kid, an older brother, took him out to play with all the other kids. And then an older dad actually hands me a plate of food and says, don't worry, you'll get the hang of it. And I was kind of like, that's pretty cool. And it's also like, all my issues are on the table, you know? The power of community to come alongside us when we feel like we may not be able to get on those scales and measure up to that calling to live in love. The passage then does an interesting turn. It makes this turn to talk about these gifts that everyone is given. It says some are apostles and prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers. And it's fascinating. It promises that gifts are given to every human being, every person. And the New Testament has many passages like this. In Romans 12, 6 through 8, it says, gifts of giving and leadership and mercy and prophecy and service and teaching. And then in 1 Corinthians, it says, gifts of administration, apostleship, discernment, faith, healing, helps, knowledge, miracles, wisdom, and hospitality. And it's fascinating because these gifts are actually the third chord. This one goes back here. Yep. There you go. How's the chords working? Cool. Okay. The third chord is gifts. And it's fascinating because the New Testament names these gifts and there's this sense of these gifts that they were never meant to box anybody in. They were meant to help us explore who we are. So we all have this great calling. This great calling to live in love. And we all know that we can't make this calling flourish. We can't really sail on the great seas without a community that surrounds us and supports us. And then our individuality comes in, our gifts. and our skills and our passions could all be put in this. And these gift lists, they're not meant to be exhaustive. You're not meant to say, well, I'm just one way. We're all mixed and matched with these different gifts. And we're all, some of us are introverts and some of us are extroverts. And some of us have more time in our life right now. And some of us have less time in our life. Gifts are meant to open us up to this awesome question. Who are you? How has God uniquely wired you? Gifts are inherently creative. Gifts help you tap into the most creative things about yourself. And so our church does this really cool thing. You can get on the website. You can take a gifts test. You can see and explore who you are and how you would fit, not just for the church, but for your entire life outside the world. My dad owned a construction company, and he would put me to work. And I don't know what it was, but I was always trying to be like the daddy, please. But I hated the work. It was just terrible for me. On the construction site all day, I'd come home grumpy and just mean. And so as I got older, it was just easy to always have a job with my dad. And I found out one day, one summer, I came home and I was like, oh, that was a horrible summer. And my mom was like, you shouldn't feel that horrible at a job. And it turns out that I had to own that I'm just not like a service helps with all my hands type of person. My dad is a service helps person. My dad's going to build you whatever you need, right? But I was like, this is horrible. I think I'd like to do something like teach or talk to people or something. And it turns out when you go home, when you do what you love, you're much happier. And so that's why gifts are important. Learning who you are and applying it to your world and learning the great calling that God has given all of us to live in love. And this, all of these gifts, all of this calling and this community and these gifts have this awesome purpose for the equipping of the saints for good service, for the building up of the body of Christ until we all come to the unity in the faith and knowledge of the Son of God, becoming people of character to the full stature of Christ, to the ability that each one of us owns our calling and our community and our gifts. We build one another up. So it's funny. When we live out of the passions and gifts that God's given us, we actually contribute to everyone being built up and shining and living a life of transformation. So when we step back because we think, oh, well, I couldn't possibly do that, we're actually hurting the whole community. And that's amazing. In the winter of 1955, Rosa Parks got on a bus. And this time she said no. She said, I am not going to participate in this racial segregation anymore. The bus driver asked her to either go to the back or get off. And the bus was full, so it would mean she would have to wait another hour before she could get home in the freezing cold. So she said no. And this set off fireworks. And basically what happened from this point is a 26-year-old pastor named Martin Luther King Jr. gathered churches, gathered the whole African-American Christian community together. And he gave some stirring words. He used his gifts. Rosa Parks used his gifts. And inspired by Rosa Parks' example, the Christian African-American community, they came together. They owned their great calling to share love with the world. And then they made a plan. And Martin Luther King Jr.'s words shared about nonviolence and what nonviolent love could do and how this could eventually change the racial segregation in Birmingham, Alabama. So then what they did for the next year was they had this amazing organizational structure where they would actually carpool together. People would pool in money for gas and for tires. And also people would walk through the snow, through the rain, through the summer months. They were going to walk. They were going to protest this bus until one small thing happened. Bus segregation fell. But it was long and it was hard and it was miles of work and effort. And an amazing thing happened. Late one night, about 7 months into it, Martin Luther King Jr. is actually singing a lullaby to his firstborn daughter. And as he puts her down to sleep, the phone rings. And he picks up the phone, and on the other side of that phone is the most searing hate and death threats coming for him. So he hung back up the phone, and it shook him to the very core of who he was, that was this all worth it? And how could someone be so hateful? And he went to bed and he tossed and he turned and he couldn't get any sleep. So he woke up and put on a pot of coffee and he simply just cried out to God. And he just said, I can't do this. We are following this calling. We're leaning on each other in community. And there's these gifts that we're all using for one another. And then he says in his autobiography, at that moment, I could hear an inner voice saying to me, Martin Luther, stand up for righteousness. Stand up for justice. Stand up for truth. And lo, I will be with you even till the end of the world. And he said this was a major turning point in his own leadership. Because see, if we have called the cords of calling and the cord of community and the cord of gifts, but we need a pulley. And God is our pulley. And 12 months into that bus boycott, the Supreme Court in the land ruled that bus segregation was unjust. Birmingham had to change all their policies. And this small ripple effect, just buses, started the civil rights movement across America. So God is the pulley. God took this incredible gifts of Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King Jr. and the community of encouragement of walking and carpooling for a year, and also that calling, that incredible calling to share love until love permeates our world. We build a rope with these cords, and these cords with God's power can move even the hardest things like racial injustice and pain and sorrow and poverty. So the birthday party finally ends and we drive back home, and it was like, you know, one of those like, phew, we've made it, right? Because, you know, I got popcorn and root beer floats waiting for me and a movie, and that I can do, right? That dad can accomplish. And we get home and we pop the popcorn and we watch this movie together, and we're watching this movie, and he actually kind of, he puts his hand like right on top of my hand. And he looks at me, and the first thing he says is, hey, Dad, blueberry blizzards? That was kind of funny, though, right? And it's the first time I was able to laugh about it, and I was like, yeah, that was kind of funny. And I wrapped my hand around his hand, and then he squeezed tight, and the flood of tears just started pouring down my cheek, because I thought about our hands, but I thought about all the community's hands from the day. And then I thought about God's hand on top of our hands. And then I thought, man, I can be a dad. I can do it. I can actually get on the scales and live worthy in this awesome calling. So tonight, may you embrace this amazing calling to live in love. May you never forget you are surrounded by people who love you in community. And may you let your gift shine for all. And may we all move this world to be more loving, more just, a better world for our kids and for our kids' kids. Amen.